I'm Justin Evangelo. This is Disenabled, the podcast where we enable people with physical disabilities. Happy 2022. First episode of the podcast for the year. One of many more consistently to be posted. Fingers crossed if I can get my act together. As of the time of this recording, the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics have come to a close. And seeing as how this is a disability-centric podcast, I have a disability and I am a huge proponent of athletics, whether it's people who are disabled or not participating in them, I thought I would put together a Road to the Paralympics series as indicated by the title of this episode, starting off with talking to someone who is trying her damnedest to get into the Paralympics. The series will feature some conversations with some Paralympians, both summer and winter, and if it catches on, I will obviously reboot it every Paralympic season, if you will. It'll also feature some discussions from my archive when this was a staple radio show on Trent Radio of possible efforts to get prospective adaptive sports into the Paralympics in the next 2, 4, 8, 10, or 12 years. You just never know what the future holds. Without further ado, here is part one of my conversation with a blind snowboarder who is planning to one day shred for gold. Enjoy. Emily Trepanier, everybody. We started early. Take two, because we were supposed to do this last week, but it fell through. So here we are. Hope all is well. You just hit the slopes yesterday. And
I did.
How was it? First time in how long? It's been a while, hasn't it?
A year and a half.
Oh, my God. Yep. 18 months without your feet strapped to a board, flying down a hill at the speed of light.
I was so excited leading up to yesterday. Met my coaches, met my new guides. We ate some snow because I fell a few times.
Great.
That's okay. That just means I'm working hard.
How were the conditions yesterday on the slopes? Again, I'm all the way in Ontario, and we're right now dealing with all this trucker business. So I'm trying to keep in the loop about all this parasports stuff, but it's not it's not as easy to find information.
Imagine it would be a little tricky. Yeah, the conditions were actually pretty good yesterday. Neat thing about snowboarding on a mountain versus a hill in Ontario is that because it's so much bigger, it seems to be affected by the weather. So if it's like really warm out, as the day goes on, the snow will actually change a bit in spots where like the sun is really like hitting the snow.
Well, it'll get more packed or something like that?
Depends. So if it's warmer, sometimes it gets like, it almost feels like sugar, like you're walking through sugar.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, it's hard to explain. It's almost like powdery. It almost gets more powdery. Versus if it's cold, it starts like hardening up. So it gets a little bit more icy. So I remember like snowboarding on hills in Ontario, it would always be pretty, like there would always be a lot of ice on the hills. Whereas when I started snowboarding out west here, there was a lot more days where it's like powdery, but they do have days where some spots of the hill, not all spots of the hill, get icy. So
yeah, makes sense, which is
definitely like a mixed bag, but it's fun to ride on, but...
Well, I can imagine. Which is easier to actually ride down the slopes on?
Riding in Ontario, I've always, like, been used to riding, like, packed down snow that is icy. But then I started riding out west here, and I kind of actually like the powdery snow a little bit better sometimes.
Well, I think we've put the cart before the horse here. Plenty of context because we've been messaging back and forth off the record for a few weeks. Emily Trepanier, blind snowboarder. Sorry, forgot to introduce that.
No worries.
Jumped right in. And I usually start with basic questions such as something like, how did you lose your sight?
So I was actually born blind, actually. And they didn't realize I was blind until about age 2. And it wasn't even the doctors that realized it. It was actually my mom who realized something was going on, because I am the youngest of three other siblings. So I have two sisters and one brother. And so when they were two, they would like reach for objects and like want to touch like objects and stuff. Whereas me, at the age of two, I was only like, I wasn't really reaching for a lot of objects. I would stare at a lot of lights and stuff, but I wasn't, there wasn't a whole lot of interest in like reaching for objects. So right then and there, my mom was like, there's something wrong here. Like, why isn't she reaching for objects? She's staring at lights a lot, but she's not reaching for objects.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
And at first, the doctors actually didn't believe her until they ran more tests and stuff. And then they realized, yeah, I was actually legally blind. So I had underdeveloped optic nerves as a child. So they didn't develop right away, and they part of it didn't develop properly. I gained vision as a child for a while. I actually had a lot more vision than what I have right now. And then I could see out of my right eye and a bit out of my left eye as a child. And then going into my teenage years, other eye conditions started to like pop up. To this day, they're still not 100% sure exactly what all of my eye conditions are. And so those other eye conditions started popping up, and I actually started losing vision. So right now it seems to be stable for the last 2 years, but they don't 100% know if it's going to remain stable or if I'm going to lose more vision. So right now I can see close up out of my right eye, and I don't see anything out of my left eye.
It's exactly like me, just different ways of getting to there. I have less than 1% vision in my right eye. That's it. Up close and personal. So if I can touch it with my nose, I can see it. Growing up, then, what drew you to athletics in general? I don't want to discriminate and just say snow sports. Yeah. So, you know,
I always loved watching the Olympics growing up as a child. When it was Olympic time, instead of finding me outside playing, you would find me like in our living room, glued to the TV, just like watching the Olympics. And it got to the point where my mom was like, you can't sit so close to the TV because you're going to hurt your eyes. And I'm like, well, that's the only way I can see them. So I would like sneak into the living room when she wasn't in there, and I would like go right up close to the TV so I could see everything that was happening. And then as soon as I heard someone come in, I would go back to the couch and stuff. I would kind of sneak around and do that as a child. And I loved it, especially the Winter Olympics. And I thought it would be like super cool to one day be one of those athletes who are competing at the Paralympics. So, and originally I thought it would be skiing, but I went to a school in Brantford for the blind and deaf blind.
Oh, W. Ross.
W. Ross, yep. So I went to the school, and my second year, I met my best friend, who's still my best friend to this day. And she had been part of a program since the age of four called the Kitchener Track 3 program. And basically, that's a program that teaches people with disabilities how to ski and snowboard. So she had been a part of that program, and I thought it was really, really neat. And so they invited me out one night to check out the program. And then the following year, I ended up signing up for ski lessons with that same program. So we would go there once a week and do ski lessons. And so I did that for a few years. And so my best friend, she had two guides, and she was learning to snowboard by this time. And so the one night, my one guide actually ended up injuring herself, so she couldn't guide me for a few weeks. So one of her guides was like, well, do you want to try out snowboarding, Emily? I'm like, okay, why not? And well, I tried out snowboarding and absolutely fell in love with it. And well, the rest is history.
What particularly made you fall in love with it more than skiing? Because there's the
I
perception
don't
of, oh,
know.
I have two things attached to individual feet. I have more control as opposed to, hey, both my feet
Yeah.
are strapped to a board, and if I don't have really good core balance, I'm eating it all the time.
Yeah, I don't know 100%. I'm thinking it's like it was a new challenge for me and I wanted to like continue like work on it, because you're right. It was so hard in the beginning to snowboard, because suddenly instead of two boards on my feet, it was one board and they were strapped to my feet. I couldn't move my feet and stuff. So I remember my first 2 years like falling almost every 5 seconds and like eating lots. I ate so much snow when I was learning how to snowboard. And then suddenly it just like it something just clicked and I was able to I suddenly I wasn't falling every 5 seconds. I was still falling, but it wasn't every 5 seconds.
There you go.
And I
Marginal
just like,
improvement over time. I like that.
yeah. And so I don't know. I think I just really like the challenge, I guess. Like I don't know. I just sort of fell in love with snowboarding. I haven't been on skis since, so.
So how do you go from that to shooting for a spot at the Paralympics to win gold? That's a huge leap and not a lot of time.
Yeah. As I said, growing up, I always thought it would be like going to the Winter Paralympics for skiing. And then when I started snowboarding, I was like, well, this would be kind of neat to be a snowboarder going to the Paralympics. Snowboarding is still a very new sport for the Paralympics. It only started in 2014 at the Paralympics. So I thought it would be super cool to be like one of the first blind snowboarders who compete at the Paralympics. So it's been my mission ever since. So
I saw that you made a stab at it in 2018. I did a little bit of digging through internet
I
archives,
did,
and
yeah.
whatever happened to that? Were you close? How far did you make it?
So right now my classification, it is currently in its developmental stage. So the big thing that they're working on right now is finding more people to compete in the legally blind
That's what I
classification.
thought. Okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of what's the I guess like standing in the way of it becoming quite like into the Paralympics, but the sport is growing. It's just taking time for it to grow. So
Is there national championships or competitions between even two countries to get you started? I'm just thinking in terms of blind men's hockey actually just had one of its first national championships between the States and Canada. They're having the same sort of problem getting it into the Paralympics. They're trying like hell, but it's still a
yeah,
fight.
it is a huge fight. There's things that are coming down the road for the sport. I haven't been told exactly what that is, but I am told that it is a very huge positive step for not only the sport of para snowboarding, but for my particular classification. So I think it's coming, but it's just that like trying to be patient and like working, continuing to train, it's kind of like a bit of a waiting game. And I've definitely been encouraged a lot by like Team Canada, and also like when I was in Ontario, and the race team that I'm a part of now, they're actually working with some of the top Canadian snowboarding coaches as well. So it's coming, but it's like everything, it's taking time. And you're right, it's a battle, because there's a lot of people that want to see it in the Paralympics, but they're just like still developing it. So in terms of like national competitions, I've not heard of anyone. There might be some in like some of the over like the countries that are overseas, there might be some there, but I'm not 100% sure. So the really cool thing is that just before the pandemic hit, I actually made a connection with a huge group in the United Kingdom who are also blind snowboarders and are also working on getting the sport into the Paralympics. So that was kind of cool. And
UK,
I've been sort
that's
of
the
like,
last place I would have thought. Wow, yeah, there's
right?
plenty of blind snowboarders in England and Ireland and
yeah,
Wales.
It sounds like it's a huge group of them, too.
Where do they snowboard? What's their ground zero? I wonder.
I don't 100% know, because so I've talked to them a bit, but I'm hoping to talk to them a bit more soon again, because once the pandemic hit, things kind of got like delayed and shut down for a while. So now that things are starting to open up, I'm hoping to be able to talk to them a little bit more to learn. But it sounds like they do a lot of traveling to different mountains and stuff. What mountains they go to, I'm not 100% sure, but from the sounds of it, it's like a pretty big group there. So,
hey, wherever they go, they're obviously, you'd like to think, practicing, obviously. So they're finding a way to, and yeah, again, the UK, you don't think of them getting pounded with snow either. So it's, what,
no,
you know,
they're definitely traveling. I just don't 100% know exactly where they would be going. That would be close for them, but still like enough snow to be practicing and like racing and stuff. So
such a fantastic conversational guest to have on. Nothing felt forced in that interview. The grandfather clock from my recording space made it in, and I didn't want to edit it out because it would have compromised the audio way too much. So there you have it. Look forward to part two. There's plenty more audio where this came from, and Emily just continues to talk more in depth about her road to the Paralympics and her want to one day compete and shred for gold. If you would like to reach out to her, I have linked all of her social media accounts relating to Team Starfish down below. That will make a little bit more sense. That name will make a little bit more sense as these parts continue to air and she gets a little bit more in depth on what Starfish means and how she got that moniker. Again, in the episode's description, as well as a way to contact me, thedisenabledpodcast@gmail.com. Obviously, that's an email address. Again, all in the episode's description. I also want to remember to tell all of you listeners that you can rate the podcast. Feedback constructive only, please. Please be as nice as possible. As to how I can create better content for all of you listening. And the next Disenabled episode, as cliche as it sounds, will be delivered to you sooner than you realize. Until next time, cheers.